Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Yusuf. Thank you for making it this afternoon to this talk. I know we have a full room. If you guys want to come over, it's a few spots here and there. Okay. So, guys, we will be discussing to you today, myself, part of members of my team here, about agile networking. And for some of you who have been following us, I don't have enough time in 1 hour to tell you about all of it and all the possible bells and whistles. So we're going to concentrate on a couple of things, give you an overall idea of Azure networking, then spend some time on developer-focused features, if you will, specifically around monitoring, debugging, packet capture, and some of the new exciting container-based networking we've been doing as well. I'll give you an idea about the overall platform, and then many of us will be around for the rest of the event to answer any questions you may have. We also have a couple of demos, so my colleagues will join us on the stage, and we'll show you some specific things as well. Okay, so a 1 hour give you a breadth first view of the system with some depth in a couple of areas, okay? Very briefly, Azure, and actually, frankly, all of Microsoft runs on a global wide area network. We have one of the biggest WANs out there of anybody, to be quite frank. So when you are using Azure 365, for that matter, Hotmail or Bing, you're using our global network. Our global network spans the globe, to be honest. We're almost in every continent. We're not in Africa yet. We have 38 announced regions. And as you may know, a region in Azure is one or more buildings, one or more data centers. So when you go to the portal and say, place my application in so-and-so region, our software basically puts you in that place, which could be one of the buildings of that region. Importantly, from a networking perspective, we have this global backbone that connects everything together. There's some vanity number here, 1.6 miles of fiber. I'm not sure what the number really is. It's just huge. We own our own fiber in the US. We lease capacity throughout the globe. And we run our own IP network. What it means for you and your applications, when you are running in Azure, within Azure with a given region or between regions, you are running on our backbone. You don't go back to the internet, no need to. Actually, the way it works is that from whatever location you might be on the face of the earth, you hit a nearby edge node to you. We are around 120 locations around the globe and expanding, which means that as soon as you can reach one of our edges, you're in our backbone and you stay there. Your app will not have to go anywhere else unless you want it to do that. And we have, for example, a service called ExpressRoute that enables you to, or your customers, to connect privately to us. So there are scenarios where your app cannot be exposed to the internet. You can keep it purely, totally private and locked and hooked privately to your customer's network as well. Some statistics, if you look at the right-hand side here, it gives you an idea of the scope of what we do. We have the multiple regions I mentioned. We have national clouds, as in Germany, China, and the US. We have many, many edge nodes out there where you connect to the network. Very importantly, we peer with thousands of ISPs around the globe, which again, from your application's point of view, it means that the latency response from your customers, from your clients to your application is as fast as physically possible. There's always physics, always distance, but we're very, very close to you. And as I mentioned, we have a bunch of technologies in there. Again, all of this stuff we document like crazy, guys, publicly, academic papers, and the like. For the rest of the talk, I want to talk about more of what you see as a programmer, as somebody who is using the platform, over all this plumbing I just mentioned quickly. In a nutshell, when your application runs on Azure, you're running in what appears to you as your own data center, as your own virtual network. We actually have an object in the REST API called VNet, which is a virtual network. It's this thing that looks to you as if it's a physical network on premises. If you ever had to configure a network, a real network physically on premises in your lab or whatever, you know how difficult that can be. You have to find switches and wires and ACLs and talk to the IT guy, and it's quite complicated. In Azure, basically, you have a template. It's a JSON template. Now, we have tens of those pre-configured for you, which you can go change. Next slide will show you more about that. And the template describes what you want. It says something like this picture. I want a virtual network. In this example, it has two subnets. You can instantiate logically a load balancer. You can define internal load balancing, external load balancing. You can define that this part of my application has to be visible to the internet. This part is not visible to the internet, and so forth. And you say, go. And from there on, our software takes over and creates this virtual network for you. For all intended purposes, your application thinks it has its own physical network with its own subnets, with all the semantics you're used to it in your own lab. The only difference is all virtual. And how the magic is done, I'll be happy to point you to papers and the like. Not for today. I want to tell you how to use this stuff today. So it's really designed for scale. You can do all sorts of things with this stuff. At the very end, I'm going to show you a couple of eye charts what you can do with all this stuff. But you can customize it to your heart's desire, importantly, to your application design. Now, for the templates, as I mentioned, we have a library of these. There are many of them. The key point I want you to remember, which I'm going to repeat over and over again, this stuff is really easy to configure compared to anything you might be able to do yourself in an actual lab or on-premises. It's all template-driven. This JSON. You can take a template, customize it to what you want, or you can do it through a portal. Virtually everything I'm describing here can be done through a portal, scripts, or APIs. You can do RESTful APIs. You can use one of the language bindings we have all over the platform for this stuff. And everything we show in the portal, by the way, is built over the same RESTful APIs. There are no magic APIs we have. There's nothing extra. It's all available to you. If you have a language not supported by us, you can define your own language bindings, etc. But this is key to us, guys. And again, if anybody here has spent time in IT building physical networks and the like, it's extremely refreshing how fast and easy you can configure these networks. And the fact that the templates already exist, you have to choose one, and your network will just work. Okay, so let me tell you a bit more about new services and features we announced in the last few months, some actually a few weeks, and a couple we're going to announce soon. So this is some of the new stuff we're adding to networking as we speak. I'm going to go through this thing in multiple slides, but here's a quick summary. We now have Network Watcher, which is a service and APIs that can be used by you to monitor your application, diagnose networking issues, troubleshoot, and importantly, packet capture. You see a demo a bit later on, and some of the power we can do in NetWatcher. We also have a built-in web application firewall. It's a service that does HTTP level firewalling. Again, you'll see more about this in a second. We have more plumbing, dual NIC, multiple IP addresses. Many of you will not care about these, to be honest, directly, but they're important to extend the scenarios for things like off-the-shelf firewalls and load balancers and protection systems, IDS, IPS, and so forth. We also added to Traffic Manager the ability now to do geo-distributed services in Azure. I'll tell you more about this in a second, but basically you can restrict where your application, where your customers are going based on where they're coming from and so forth. All these are available now, fully supported, generally available. We also have in preview in a couple of weeks accelerated networking for Linux. In Geek Talk, it's our IOV for networking, which means simply very, very fast networking. We also have Azure Venus for containers. And again, you'll see a demo of this and how we now extend virtually everything I'm discussing today, all the subnetting and IPs and load balancing, not just to VMs, but to containers too. And you'll see a demo of this stuff as well. Okay? So I'm going to spend some time now going through each bullet in a couple of slides, and I'll stop. Somebody will come on stage, give you a demo of some of this stuff. So let's discuss load balancing in Azure in general. This is an all-up view of how do you load balance your application in Azure. This is an older slide if you've been following us, but this shows the complete hierarchy of load balancing in Azure. The purple row which is labeled ALB, Azure Load Balancer, the Layer 4 Load Balancer, is built in. It's free. It's a basic Layer 4 Load Balancer in Azure. If you have a public IP address, you're going through the SLB or ALB. We use the same term for both. So this is the basic way you load balance a bunch of things, containers or VMs. And this one is, you cannot bypass this one. It's really built in. Everything else in this chart is optional. You can bring your own. You can use our own services in there. So starting from the top, your application will get traffic from the internet to endpoints that you define, DNS names, IP addresses, et cetera. You can optionally use Azure Traffic Manager to do DNS-based load balancing. You have multiple policies in there. You can decide where, based on DNS names, that they should go here versus there, based on performance policies, availability policies. If your Western Europe application goes down, you can send it to the East US, for example. Or, as you'll see in a second, based on geographical routing, which is a new feature. If you don't like Azure Traffic Manager, you don't have to use it. If you want to use Akamai, level 3, go for it. But this is built in, easy to use, not very expensive. You go to the portal, et cetera. Next level, after the traffic arrives to an endpoint, it goes through a load balancer. And this is configured by you in template, in JSON, in the portal as well. And you can say basic layer 4 load balancing, 5 tuples, round robin, that kind of stuff, with probing, et cetera. After that, if you want to, you can instantiate an application level gateway. This is HTTP level load balancing, layer 7. It's optional. If you want to put an F5 in there, we have it in the marketplace. If you want to use an Netscaler, we have it in the marketplace too as well. Or if you want something sort of simpler, easy to manage, not as full-fledged, mind you, you can use our application gateway service in there. And I'll tell you more about this in a second as well. So this is the hierarchy, guys. You can go very simple. You can actually ignore all of this picture by defining a simple template with a publicly addressable IP address, and you automatically get the purple line in there. Or you can get fancy. Effectively push an application gateway there, maybe a WAF, et cetera. Okay? Now, let me go through a couple of these boxes and tell you a bit more about what they do. For Azure Traffic Manager, we added a new feature recently. So we've had this for a while. If you're using a bunch of services in Microsoft, you're using Traffic Manager. If you use Skype, you're using Traffic Manager, et cetera. Traffic Manager can do a bunch of things, as I mentioned. It can fail over your traffic from one place to the other. It can optimize for performance. Now, there's a new policy called geographical routing, in which you can direct your users to specific geographical locations based on where they're coming from. And the policies are kind of flexible. So this picture is trying to show you that you can define, for example, a policy that says, all my customers from North America, South America, can end up in US East, for example. Or in this other example, all your customers in India can go to Australia. Not the best example, but you get the point. This actually can be quite useful. There are certain customer scenarios where, for compliance, data sovereignty needs and the like, will require your application to be limited to certain locations. With this policy, now we can enforce that. This was highly asked by a bunch of folks. And again, guys, if you don't care about this stuff, don't worry about it. But somebody will ask you, configure the app to do this. And this can be done without your app changing one bit. The app itself is the same. Your app just has a bunch of public endpoints. This is how the traffic comes to it from wherever it may be coming from. Okay? This is GA. You're going to see more stuff coming to Traffic Manager soon as well. For the built-in load balancer, this is the Azure load balancer. This is the basic IP layer load balancing in the system. As I mentioned, it's built-in. And by the way, guys, everything I'm discussing here is actually a service. You don't actually start up a virtual machine called load balancer. You don't actually go and manage it per se. You declare you want it and it just goes. So with this, you can load balance TCP, UDP traffic. You can load balance public traffic coming to you from the internet, which is the most common scenario. Or if you have a sophisticated application where you have a multi-tier app, you can do it, use it to do internal load balancing. So in this figure, the bottom sort of cross switch-like thing on the top, the top one is the public load balancer. And the one embedded inside your virtual network is the internal load balancer. Again, these are virtual concepts, but you control what they do. And again, as I mentioned, you just instantiate them. There's no startup configuration type of stuff. And if you want to add 10 more VMs, just say so. Add 10 more VMs, we'll load balance them, and so forth. And there are, of course, probes to make sure that if the guy is down, we don't send the traffic there and the like. And from day one in Azure, this has been always available for free. Now, what we've shipped a few months ago, or we're adding more feature to, is the application gateway, which is layer 7, or HTTP load balancing. Again, it's highly available. It's a service, again. You just declare, I want it. It happens for you. It can do a number of things. It can do SSL termination. It can do application layer routing based on HTTP rules, and has a bunch of rich diagnostics. I'll spend a slide in each one of these bullets now, right now. So it can do SSL offload. So you don't have to worry about your certificates being in every destination VM, and worry about your VM worrying about this stuff. You can offload all the SSL processing to it, including the management of the SSL certificates. And you effectively terminate the SSL connection there. And you have control over policies. We have a number of policies in there, in which protocols you accept and which you don't. And more recently, we add the ability to encrypt from it to the back end as well, through a different certificate as well, if you want to. And there's some scenarios where you want that to happen. Again, the beauty of this, by and large, your app doesn't change. It just, you know, traffic comes to you, it's encrypted, and then you go from there. So that's one feature for application gateway. That one, of course, is you can do routing based on your URLs, URIs. So based on that, you can do also policies in there. You can, based on the request path, send the traffic different places. And you can configure built-in up to 20 backend pools. If you want more, give us a call. There's a way to click in the portal. We'll increase it for you. And you can scale them independently depending on what the URI looks like. And they can do things like multi-site support using this thing. So you can have one site with one name or a different name, and you can configure it also the same way as well. And of course, it does also cookie-based session affinity. That's kind of obvious for layer 7. That's important as well. And we have WebSocket support as well nowadays. And importantly, if you know about the rest of Azure, this is integrated with VM scale sets. So if you want to add another 10 VMs, 100 VMs to your VM scale set, just add them. We'll load balance to them, and vice versa. You can shrink down as well. And again, it's a service built in here. If you want to use it, there's extra charge for this thing. For you, the last couple of years, guys, many of you have been asking us for add more diagnostics to this stuff, please. And you're right. We kept adding features, not enough diagnostics. Now, as you see for the rest of my presentation, we have a lot more diagnostics in the platform. App Gateway actually has a bunch of rich diagnostics. Access logs of each request, performance logs to know what's really happening in you for each request, a bunch of health logs, integration with the rest of the platform, and Azure Monitor as well. Azure Monitor is part of the whole portal experience for Azure, and this stuff is really fully integrated there as well. Okay, so I told you about basically all the load balancing stuff. There's an add-on premium feature to the application gateway, which is actually a web application firewall. You can enable it extra, a bit more money, and for that you can now do actually firewall at effectively HTTP level as well. Again, same thing, highly available, built-in, managed service. You can protect the application without changing your app. Again, all this stuff is sort of out of band your app proper. Our WAF is pre-configured with a set of rules. This is actually an open source set of rules. You can go look them up OWASP basically has a set of rules. I'll show the list in a second. Things like SQL injection protection, XSS attacks, cross-scripting attacks, and so forth, with very wide community support. We actually pick it up from the community, put them in the service out there, with a bunch of configurable rules as well. So you decide which ones you want to apply to the traffic coming to your application. And the way it's done is actually straightforward, guys. It's a portal experience. You go click on the rules. The built-in rules is a sampling them, SQL injection, cross-site scripting, et cetera. Today, you cannot author your rules yet. It's a coming feature, guys. You can configure the rules, though. So you can configure them quite a bit of time, different ways, the different rule sets. You can disable individual ones and so forth. And again, guys, you can just put this in front of your app, and it will do a very good job protecting you against a bunch of these attacks as well. Again, without touching your app. And of course, as I mentioned, we invested heavily in monitoring because you asked us to. So we have integrated logging from the WAF. We tell you what we blocked. It integrates the logs with things like you can get a JSON format log and go party on it yourself. You can plug them into Event Hub from Azure or OMS from Microsoft. It's yours. So the format is quite open, if you will. And it's also integrated with, I'm going very fast, guys, I know, with Azure Security Center. That's part of Azure as well, the portal experience. Azure Security Center integrates a lot of signals from multiple sources and gives you recommendations how to protect your application. And you can use it to view, protect, detect, respond to security threats across a bunch of parts of your application. And gives you recommendations also what to do. So we're actually very happy with how the whole thing is coming together as well. Okay, so let me now segue into deeper look at the whole monitoring space, and then we're gonna give you a demo of NetWatcher. Okay? So the whole space of networking debugging has been something that you really asked us for. And the question typically is this, or like this: how do I know my service is really working well, generally speaking? Is it up and running? How much am I consuming? What do I need to add more or save money, do less? And for networking in particular, troubleshooting has always been an issue. How do I know what my topology is? You'd be surprised. You get a template from somebody, you write some code, and you end up with some funky topology, and what are my packets? How can I do packet capture without touching every piece of code I have? Why can't I SSH into my VM? And is there a firewall in my way? And if so, is it blocking me? These are hard things to debug, typically. So we invested in making it easy for you. So we have, in Azure in general, something called Resource Health, in which you can click on any resource you have and it will tell you if it's healthy or not. And of course, networking resources are also included there as well. We also have Azure Monitor, which will give you metrics and alerts per resource. And many of the networking resources are integrated there as well. But we felt that from networking perspective, we needed more. We needed more of an end-to-end view of your networking resources. So that's why we invested in Network Watcher. Network Watcher basically gives you end-to-end insight into your virtual network, if you will. And it has three pillars. It's a topology view of your network. And trust me, once your app ends up being bigger and bigger and part of somebody else's app, the topology can get very complex. So you see a very nice picture of where things are. Has a bunch of diagnostic tools, and we're adding more, by the way. You can ask questions of, you know, for this container or VM, what's the next hop? Where's it going? Because somebody may have done some routing thingy and it's going somewhere else. You can look at your network security groups. You may not care in the app, but somebody may have configured for you an NSG, which means it's like a network access control list. You cannot do this, you can do that. You can look at them as well. And you can do package capture. And I think we'll show a demo of package capture, correct? It's very easy, to be honest. You can click on a button, get a bunch of packets, and you go do stuff with them. You can also capture flow logs. What flow logs are, especially if you're asked to have a mechanism to make sure your application is compliant to whatever security rules you may have, it will capture all the information from network security groups and what is it blocking and not blocking. And this key can run this 24/7, get the logs, and give them to your favorite tool or security guy, if you will. OK. So this stuff is shipping. It's generally available in most regions at the moment, all the public regions. We're adding some new stuff. This will show up in a couple of weeks. So we have a new feature added, connectivity check. It's kind of neat, actually. You can look at, take any VM or container you have in your application and say, can I get to this destination? Well, destination could be, you know, another VM, some URI, or some DNS name. And we basically show you the network hops from here to there. And we'll do all the heavy lifting into figuring out why not and so forth. This stuff is available in preview a couple of weeks. PowerShell, SDK, CLI, and of course, by the time we go in GA, it will be in a portal as well. It's actually quite powerful, guys. Now, enough me talking. Let's show you a demo of Network Watcher. Let me check when I come over.
Hello? It's going excellent. Great. 1 second. Hi. So before I begin the demo on the service, I just want to talk a bit about how my setup looks like. So I've created a resource group over here, as you can see. Let me know if you can see it clearly or do I need to increase the font. Good? OK. So let's start by grouping them by type. And what I have over here is I start off with a virtual network, so a VNet. I've got a couple of subnets in it. And each subnet has a few VMs and some NICs, and I've got network security group configured, and it's all in over here, as you can see. Now, if I were to tell you this is how my deployment looks like, it's really hard for us to, or for you even, to see what's connected to what, who's talking to whom, how are my subnets distributed. If I've put a network security group, is it applied on my subnet level, is it on a VM or the NIC, where it is, right? So that's one of the first things that we wanted to handle in Network Watcher. And this is the service interface, and it's available right now. And all you got to do is click topology. I'll pick the same subscription, go to my resource group, and let's select the VNet, and there you are. So this is how my topology looks like right now. I have a multi-tier VNet, and I have about 5 VNets, and it looks like I created a front-end subnet and didn't put anything in it, and it's just hanging over there. But I have an app subnet. As you can see, I have a firewall subnet, audit, and then finally the database. The interesting thing that you'll observe is that I've got an NSG that's applied onto my subnet level over here. And each of these VMs, as you see, there's a app tier, a multi-tier app zero VM that has got 2 NICs, and one of them has a public IP. So this gives an idea, a visual representation of how your topology looks like, and now it makes a lot more sense. As and when you add more resources to it, they'll just come up over there for you. So now you have the topology, you see it. But in reality, you want to, you know, log it into your VMs and want to do some debugging. You want to understand what's happening. So you often, you know, RDP into your machines. And what ends up happening is, in some cases, there might be a network security group rule configured, and you just get a message, sorry, can't RDP. And then you're stuck over here to understand what's going on, right? So for that, we just build a handy tool for you, which is called IP Flow Verify. So let's go to the multi-tier app zero VM again. What this does is, here you specify I'm doing a TCP as my protocol. I select my protocol. I specify my direction, inbound or outbound. I say, OK, I want to go to 3389. For this, I give my local IP. And then I say, you know what? I don't know what my port is on my machine, but let's check. So now it's performing a synthetic check right now. It's looking at all the network security groups that are configured and the rules, and it'll tell you which rule will allow or deny this particular tuple for you. As in this case, the rule over here is RDP rule. So that's the rule that actually is saying, yes, the traffic is allowed. Now, if you really want to see what are all the rules that are applied onto your particular NIC, all you do is you can go to a group security view, wherein I'll pick up my resource again, the same one, on the same NIC, and then you will see what are my effective rules over there in one place. Not only that, you'll also see the order, the priority order in which those rules are being applied. So it gives you a very good sense of how these rules will be applied. And on top of that, it also tells you, these are my default. Whenever I see a default prefix, that means these are the platform rules that have been created for you. And then you go into the user rule, these are the rules that have been defined. And if I just sort the priority, you see the RDP rule right there at 102. That was the one that you just saw, which was allowing the traffic. Had I marked it as deny, or somebody might have just misconfigured it and put deny, you won't be able to RDP into your box at that point. Right, so now, as we are here, let's take a look at, go back to our topology again. The other interesting thing is, when you're debugging a problem, or you're trying to understand what's happening in your system, you really want to know, okay, I'm talking from this VM over here, multi-tier app zero, I want to reach over to my DB subnet over here, and I have configured my firewall subnet, which is my virtual appliance, and I want all my traffic to be routed over here first, okay, and then it should go somewhere else. If that's your configuration, or you just want to check what would be my next hop going forward from this particular location, you can go back over here into the next hop, select the same VM, and then I want to go to my backend subnet, which happens to be 10.1.4.4, and I validate that. This also comes in handy if there is a route black holing scenario that's happening. You don't know, you might have a misconfigured route, and all of a sudden all your traffic is going somewhere else, not destined to the place where it was actually intended to. And you would spend hours and hours trying to figure out what's happening in my system. But with this tool, you can just sit in portal and it'll tell you. So this is 2.4 happens to be my firewall subnet over here. And there is a route that has been configured. And that's what's pushing all the traffic in that direction. So let's assume that you're finally able to RDP and you're into the VM. And in some cases, you are debugging your applications, right? And one other thing that's interesting that you would require is wire data. So if you're trying to figure out, okay, I want to do some packet captures, I want to get the capture data and figure out what's happening. So up till now, what you would do is log into the machine, go there, figure out what's happening, have your favorite tools, start your captures, store it there, put it in a different location, download it, all the jazz. Now what you can do, if you're in the portal itself, you can just head over and click here. So this is showing the captures that I've already run so far. I can go back to my subscription here. I'll show you the captures. And you can go click add over here. So you can, over here, you can pick any of your VMs. You can give a capture a friendly name. This is capture for build. And then you can say, you know what, go ahead and store it in one of the storage locations that are available. So you can specify a storage account. That's your blob storage right there. Or if you want to choose, you can say, okay, you know what, when you're doing that, might as well save a copy on my VM as well. So you can select the file, specify the file location, it'll save a copy of the capture on the VM too. Then we give you some more configuration options over there. One of the things is maximum bytes per packet. I mean, it's not necessary that if you're debugging a scenario, you don't want the whole capture to be there, you're just interested in the headers. So all you do is, okay, fine, just capture the first 60 bytes, I'm good to go over there. Similarly, you can configure how many maximum bytes per session do you want to do, right? Or how long do you want the capture to go on for? Right now, you can initiate a capture up to 5 hours, but you can configure anything below 5 hours, and that will be good. And then we thought that, you know, okay, I'm still giving you all the traffic, everything is coming in. How about a bit of a filtering capability? So if I go back to my, if I look at my view, all I'm interested in my front end and my back end and the communication between those two VMs, right? So I can say, you know what? I don't want the whole thing. Just give me the local IP is this, and the remote is, that's it. And I add this filter. Now what will happen is, it'll take captures only for those filtered IPs. So you don't have to, you know, go and parse through all that data that's happening. You just focused on what you need. And then you can go ahead and add as many filters as you want. I can say, okay, just do another TCP and give me everything that's coming on AT as well while you're at it. And then you can initiate your capture over here. So let's go and take a look. So here is one of the captures. Once it gets done, this was stored on your location. You can go click over here and then click download. It's as simple as that. And when you open the capture, it directly opened up in Wireshark. The reason being, all these captures are stored in a PCAP format. So all the tools that you've been using so far, either it could be Wireshark or anything else, it just is compatible. So now you have the data when you need it, and you can go ahead and start your investigations. So let's go back into the topology one more time. So I go here. Another scenario that, so these are all released features that are available in the service. There is a lot more. I would highly encourage you to go and check the other features. The other thing that we are working on right now is, how can I understand if these two or three things are connected, or is my particular VM or the flow is there? You know, I want to just make sure that everything that's coming over here into multi-tier app zero is able to reach to my database subnet over here. Is it possible for me to get an understanding of how it can be done? And for that, we have released, that's in preview, a feature called as connectivity. So right now I can show you, this is the PowerShell that we have. So we've selected the same subscription. I have my source as multi-tier app zero, and the destination as database zero over here. And then I can go ahead and try and check connectivity between these two endpoints. So this is my multi-tier app zero, and this is my database zero. I want to see if these two endpoints are connected or not. So this API takes a few minutes to run. So by the time it runs, I'll show you the one that I just ran before it started. It's the same thing. What it gives you is, first, the connection status. In this case, as you can observe, it says unreachable. We would also, if it was reachable in a scenario, we'll give you the average latency, the min latency, and the max. We also tell you how many probes we had sent to identify whether it was a connection was good or not. And we also talk about how many probes failed over there. And then we get into a list of what we call as hops. Now, what this is telling me over here is, let's go hop by hop. So I start off from my NIC over here, which is my app NIC, which is right here. I start my journey from here. And then it says, OK, once you reach your app NIC, you go over to your virtual appliance. It tells me what my next hop is. I go to my virtual appliance, which happens to be my front firewall NIC right here. And then my firewall, I go over to the next, which is my AU NIC, which happens to be my audit subnet NIC. And something interesting happened over there. There was an issue where it says the origin is outbound. So anything that's going outbound from that point onwards is actually having a severity, which is of error. So there's a problem definitely there. And it seems to be that there is a network security rule that is blocking your traffic. And when you look at what is the rule, it tells you that there's a rule called port 80 that's not allowing traffic to go forward. And this is your final destination, and that's why you were unable to reach there. So now let's take a look at what was there in the configuration. So if I go back over here, if I go back to my audit NSG, and I take a look at it, I have a port 80 configured which says deny all outbound communications. So that's one of the few things that you can do it, you would be able to do. This checks a bunch of other heuristics that we are plugging in, like we were talking about earlier, such as if you have a misconfigured firewall rule, it'll tell you. It'll also tell you all the latencies and everything so that you can focus and plan on the right thing. So one last thing now is that all these things are good, but if the issue has already happened and then you go around debugging it and figuring out what's happening, it's sometimes a bit too late. Okay, you want to be in a position where something is happening, something wrong, somebody changes the configuration, or anything happens, you need to be informed at that point and action needs to be taken. Then the diagnostic information should be available to you at that point, not later on. So for that, what we recommend is to use how you can integrate with the Azure monitors alerting functions. So you can create an alert over here and then say, you know what, when the alert gets fired, say for in this case, somebody goes and changes a network security rule for you, configure your alert and say, okay, fire my alert, and then do a connectivity check right there. And if you really want to know how to do that, so we have documentation over here which explains you how you can set your alerts, how you can integrate with the Azure functions, and then there's a code that you can just simply paste in, and then it gives you a very good idea what you can do further with that. Sorry, it just started moving. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, that's all I had. Thank you. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much. That's great, actually. And guys, stay tuned. We'll be adding more to this tour. OK, guys, switching subject a bit. And this will be followed by another demo, and we'll be done. So recently, we have announced something called Azure VNet for Containers. In a nutshell, guys, we're making containers in Azure as full-fledged as VMs as possible. From a networking perspective, we're basically exposing into your code in containers the same rich set of features, APIs, mechanisms for the VNet that's available to VMs, also to containers as well. So in this simple picture on the right-hand side, the lower blue box, which is the underlying VNet, is now reflected inside your container as well. So whether your code is running in a real VM, if you will, or inside a container, you see the same networking feature set. As you may know, we have something called Azure Container Service in Azure. It's used to deploy and manage the infrastructure, and it starts your favorite orchestrator. And you can see the list we support there. What Azure VNet containers do is allows you to run the same code, the same orchestrators, while exposing the VNet features for you. It's as simple as that, guys. So a bit more details here. You are basically connected to the same network as if you are as if your container is a VM as well. And it can do the full-fledged feature set we have in the platform to you guys. So for example, if you have a very sophisticated topology with connectivity to on-premises, to express route and VPNs and what have you, all this stuff just works. So if your code inside a container is connecting to, say, a machine on-premises, and somebody connected your VPN to it, it will just work. The code will not change. And the way we've done this thing, to be honest, is that we have a way to plug in into the containers, I'll show you in a second, such that the fidelity is quite high. And it's the same policies you apply, the same APIs you apply, regardless where your code may be running as well. So at the bottom, basically, we can support the VNet for containers for Azure and on-premises in Azure Stack. It's actually the same code exactly. We do it both for Linux and Windows, of course. And the way it works, really, if you would like to know, there are plugin models for these orchestrators out there. There's a CNI model and CNM model. We support both. That's how actually we, so basically these reflect the underlying mechanism all the way to the application. And if you want to see the code, it's open source. So you can configure it and run with it, or you can go to GitHub and pick up the code yourself and see how it actually works. Now, this stuff is easier to see in a demo than me talking, so Narayan here will show you the actual demo, how the stuff really works.
All right, guys.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, good. So before I start, have you played with containers in Azure, Jindal? Show of hands, pretty good. All right, so then this will be a good refresher for you. So what we have is, this is what I'm going to demo to you. So I'm going to use the ACS service, Azure Container Service. That's the easiest way to run containers in Azure. And I'm going to select the Kubernetes model over there. So I'm going to actually deploy or show you a deployment of a Kubernetes cluster with two agent nodes that can run containers. And I'm going to go into the master and show you how these containers get networking from the platform, right? By default, they use the networking that is given by Kubernetes. But since you're running in Azure, you may as well take advantage of the rich SDN stack that we have built, everything that Yusuf told you about in virtual networks and load balancers and application gateways. You can use that, and that's what I'm going to be showing to you. So, let's switch screens now. All right. So ACS, our Azure Container Service, can be launched from portal. But easier, a devish way, I would think, is to actually do it from ACS engine. So if you've been running containers, you probably saw that. This is an open source repository in GitHub where you can just go and download this from that, build it yourself, and use ACS engine to actually launch the Kubernetes cluster, easiest and fastest way. When you do that, all you really have to do is supply to ACS engine a configuration file. So this is a very, not a big configuration file, a very small one, as you can see here. you say that, okay, I want to deploy a cluster, a container cluster. The orchestrator is Kubernetes, right? And this is the key element here. For network policy, you're saying use Azure. Now, if you leave it empty or don't mention anything, it's going to use Kubernetes default network policies. But if you say use network policy as Azure, we're going to supply networking for every container that you're going to bring up in this pod or in this cluster, right? There are other providers also that we support, like Calico. You could also choose them, but you may as well also choose Azure if you're running in Azure. Now, so you take this and you just say ACS engine and then deploy this file. A result of that would be something like this. Once you've just used ACS engine executable and gave that configuration file to it, you will get a deployment like this. You get a new resource group, and you will get the resources under the resource group. So it's kind of an eye chart at this point in time, but you see that we got the full Kubernetes cluster set up over here. So it has storage accounts, network interfaces, VMs, and VNets. So let's filter, and then let's look at, you know, what network it put this cluster into. So I'm just going to select VNet over here. So it created one virtual network for us. It's called as a Kubernetes KA. It's VNet, and it is in the address space 10/8, 10.0.0/8. And you see that there are a lot of devices connected to this. That's because I've provisioned a lot of IP addresses in this network to be given to containers when they show up, right? That's all I've done here. And if you go back and see how many virtual machines this guy really has, it'll have like three virtual machines, and whatever else I have in my Kubernetes cluster will in my VNet will show up here. So let's go and filter for virtual machines. There you go. And you can see that there is a Kubernetes Linux pool one, another one. So there are two Linux machines that are waiting. It's called slaver agent that can launch containers. I have one Kubernetes master. And I have a Linux VM, a Ubuntu VM, and a Windows VM. These are all VMs in my network, right? They're also there. They could be doing other functions for you because most people run hybrid, right? They don't run all their workloads in containers. Some workloads are containerized, and some of your traditional applications are still running in VMs. So this is generally what you will have in hybrid, both VMs and containers. Now, what I have done here is I've done PuTTY and gone into the Kubernetes master, okay? So let's see what nodes it has. Kube control get nodes. It'll give me the nodes. As you saw, those two Linux pools listed over here and one master. So all I'm operating on is three VMs right now. One is a master, and I have two agents, which is going to launch containers for me. So let me go to Kubernetes and look for what are the pods that I have here. Pods are basically containers, right? So I'll list them over here. So I have at least three pods running. They're called Nginx. Nginx is one of the most basic Dockerized image that you have that you can use for running a web app. So I just launched that, and I have three of them. Now, here is where I want you to notice. The IP address for each of these pods comes from a 10.240 address space. If you remember, my VNet was a 10/8. So these IP addresses are basically are coming from my virtual network. Each of these pods actually do have an IP address from a virtual network. Now let me go into one of the pods and show you how easy it is to actually connect to the rest of my network. So what I'm going to do here is, okay, so, and then let me give a pod name. Let's go into this pod. Okay. Now I'm inside that particular container, or inside a particular pod. And let me just ping one of the other pods over here. So I went into the 10.240.0.166. So let me ping 10.240.0.49. Look at that, I'm able to ping it. Now, if you notice, that was running in a different VM. It was running in Linux pool, okay, let me just close that. Okay, so it was running in a, so let's just go and get the, okay, I'm here, and then that should now work. Yeah, so this was actually running in a different VM, different Linux pool, zero. So I was in one, I was in this container, I pinged the 49, which is in a different VM, it just works. So container to container can just work, even if you're running in different agent nodes, right? That's because both these containers are belong to the same network, the same VNet. And within a virtual network, we have full connectivity. Now, to just prove the point, let's go back and pick up one of the other VMs, a Linux VM or Ubuntu VM. And those VMs actually have address space 10.10.10.4. So let me go into one of these containers again and ping a different VM in my VNet. I am able to ping a different VM. So this container right here has full connectivity to anything that is running in my virtual network. Now, in the interest of time, let me speed up my demo. What I'm going to show next is load balancing using our Azure load balancer, the one that ALB, the layer 4 TCP UDP load balancer that's built into a platform. Using that, I'm going to run an application on two containers and basically load balance across those containers. That's what I'm going to show you. So it's very easy to do that. So let me even kind of show you how to do it. So all you really have to do is, if you want to create a new application, right? Let me say test ALB. That's my new app. And then I'm just using a Nginx image that is like standard, three replicas. I fire that off. So because I have to exit, I have to be in the master when I do that. Okay. And okay, so I have to retype that. Okay, and replace this with test ALB. Now, that's already created. So if you go and see, you see that extra three test ALB ones. There are three containers already launched and running, right? Now let me go and create a service. To do that, all I have to do is do this guy, kubectl expose deployment test ALB. So all I'm saying is expose this on port 80. Let's expose this to the world, right? So I'm creating a load balancer configuration. So now if you go and check kubectl for now, this test ALB is already created as a service that is going to get exposed in 80, port 80 using TCP. Now you see that the external IP is none because I haven't gone to the Azure yet to ask for an IP address to publish this to the world. All I have done is created three containers and I created a configuration for load balancing. That's all I have done. But I have to get a public IP address and expose this to the world. Doing that is also very, very simple. You can do it within seconds. So what I'm going to do here is all I have to do is do an edit on the test ALB configuration. And I go all the way back here. And then they say the type is a load balancer. So all I have to do here is say load balancer. All right. Exit. Now if you go and check, it's say pending. Right now it's talking to Azure to go get a public IP address and expose it to the world. Now we don't have to wait for that because I have a very similar setup which I've done using the other three Nginx machines. So let me go and see exactly what I did. Let me see if that website is responding. All right. Welcome to port 10.240.166. Now, there's a lot of affinity over here, so every time I refresh, I still get the same output. But since I know that's going to happen, what I'm going to do is do a curl and show you the same and show you the different output, 165.134.181. So that says welcome to port 143, right? Okay, let's keep 49. So this is now alternating between the different containers, right? So if I have to kill one of these containers, right, you'll automatically get launched. So it's 166, right? Let me go and try to kill that container. That's the last step, so bear with me. Okay, so once exists in this container, so let me just copy that. Okay, and I'm going to say delete pod. It's got deleted. So if I go back here and do a refresh, why do I get this? Because kube control, automatically Kubernetes created a different container for me. And the default for that page, I have not changed it to do a custom output. So it just has a default welcome to Nginx page. So you see that even if containers are getting deleted on the background, you still, your service continues to run and you can service. So that's using Azure's native SDN. Thanks. This is no, star one. So what is this?
Five.
Five?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Narayan. Guys, we're almost done. Just want to very quickly show you a couple of pictures. What can you do with how you can put this whole thing together? Really, you can build very sophisticated topologies. And frankly, some of you, some of our customers are using very sophisticated topologies here. So this VNS subnet stuff I've been talking to you about can be configured in multiple ways. What we see many customers do is central IT may go and decide the policy must be this. And they build a hub VNet, put all the DMZ and firewalls and the like, and they give many of us as developers their own VNets. We can go to town. So we have built all the infrastructure, including the RBAC controls and access controls and the like, to allow this model, where the complexity can be shoved us along, if you will, in this hub, and allow you to do many things inside your spoke, if you will, or your side of VNets as well. And we've documented this stuff left and right, by your guess. And lastly, don't even look at this, but this is how people are doing nowadays with this system, guys. This is actually a snapshot of not an atypical enterprise deployment topology, crossing the spectrum from on-prem to the public cloud and so forth. And again, guys, if you are into this space, we have a lot of blueprints and documentation in this stuff. Guys, I'm done. Here's a very quick summary. We've been investing quite a bit the last year or so enhancing developer productivity and, frankly, debugging and monitoring infrastructure. The built-in template infrastructure is really very important to manage all the stuff. And you'll see a lot more of the stuff coming from us as well. Thank you very much for your attention.